Frank, I'm kind of excited to introduce you as an award-winning LOA channeler, although that's been true for many years now. Has Communion of Light won just about every year?
No, I think there was one or two years where it didn't happen. But, you know, that's the wonderful thing about metaphysics, is winning is just really a state of mind. So, and this
that.
Is just the cherry on the top. That's what makes it even better.
There you go. Well, I am really grateful for you being willing to give us some more time to play today. I feel like last month all we did was scratch the surface of all the fun things I can ask you about, so thanks for being here today. And in my attempt to not be selfish and just only ask my questions, I did invite others to share with me. In fact, Jackie,
yes.
Oh, Frank, wait, before we start questions, Frank, tell us about your new book.
Are you recording this, Ms. Janet?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Well, my new book is not metaphysical at all, other than the fact that its method of coming into being is completely metaphysical. But it's a mystery novel set in San Francisco in 1953. The title is called The Unexpected Heiress, and it's the first in a series of books. I'm actually almost done with book two. And this book I started 2 weeks ago on Friday coming up, and had it written in 3 days. And it's short.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's only about 30,000 words, but it was a delight to write, and then I got it up on Amazon really fast, and I just love the story. I'm in love with the characters. And as a couple of people have asked me this question, like, would you ever want to go back and be there at that time? Based on the research I've done, absolutely not. But I love being able to look at it and see it from a distance. And also, one of my favorite things about the characters is that the core characters are all very freedom-loving beings. There's just no other way to put it. And so they have their shit. They have their stuff, you know, that they're dealing with, and they have lots of contrast. But, you know, it combines two of my favorite things, being gay and loving history. And so, like, I combine those together and then put a mystery around it, and ta-da, here you go.
Ta-da is right. I just love how you said, even though the subject in the book isn't necessarily metaphysical, the creating of it was. I was so impressed when I read how swiftly your first one came together. I didn't know you were duplicating that again. So, congrats. Jackie's asking your title again.
The Unexpected Heiress. If you want to find out more, go to nickwilliamspi.com. Not
you have a website?
Ooh. Please don't send an email to the nickwilliams.com family, because they're very upset with the fact that, and this is how I know this is really big, because the contrast got intense for about a day, where I had put the wrong URL at the back of the book. I'd forgotten the PI part, and then I started getting these emails saying, stop sending, like, what are you doing to us?
That's
so
cool.
I was like, yeah, I was like, good, contrast, yes.
So no, it's cool. Is it how many people are?
Yeah.
I mean, that just says, yeah, you got an audience. That's
yeah.
Cool.
So that's nickwilliamspi.com, and you'll find all sorts of goodies there. So.
Yay.
I've got a foster cat who just came into the office for the first time. I've let them out of the office for a couple days now. This is her first time coming downstairs into the office, and she is meowing. So.
Yeah.
I may mute in between questions, but Jackie, you had a great one that I saw on Facebook this morning in a private group, and I thought that might be a wonderful one to start off with today. What do you think?
Oh, I will take the opportunity. Thank you.
Jackie, it's all yours.
Okay. So it has to do with current affairs and how we position ourselves and what we put our attention on. Because I'm really, really steamed about this white racist rapist person. And I don't want it on my wall because, you know, it's just so not what I want on my wall, and, you know, where attention goes, energy flows, etc. But I do want to speak about it within the context of who I am and what I do. So in other words, not diving into the ugly, but shining a light on being careful what we shine a light on.
Well, see.
And so this is a dilemma.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course it's going to be a dilemma because you're trying to not have something that you already have. So
yeah.
Abraham has a great, I love this idea of like falling out of an airplane without a parachute. And there's that period of time where it's, you don't have the parachute and you're just out of the airplane, and there's kind of an inevitability of something that's coming. And you can mm-hmm. fight it, or you can actually gracefully allow the transition to occur. Now, the thing is that, of course, like, if you're falling out of an airplane, you have some immediate ideas of, like, oh, this is all going to be over very quickly. But if we take that idea and then apply it here, I'm going to say this, and you might really hate me for saying it, so feel free to hate me.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. No.
This is your person. He belongs to you. You don't like him, but he belongs to you. He's in your reality, and it's already too late. The genie's already out of the bottle.
Right.
So you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And the last thing, it was funny, I was just thinking about this earlier today. The last thing that would be helpful, I think, would be to try to school anybody. Because it's none of your business what they think. All you need to do is decide the reality you want to be in, which is, you know, a one where, I'm assuming this is the case, where there's a woman who is president. And that's a very easy thing to think about. And if you want to, really, you know, I mean, this is just, I love this kind of stuff. If you really want to hang your hat on something, just think about how weird it's going to sound. Because, you know, with Bill Clinton being first gentleman, that there's going to be so if you think about that, like, that means if he's that person, if he has that title, and all you're thinking about is, like, first dude, because you just kind of, my mind reels at, like, all the different nicknames that are going to be thrown at him, and he'll just laugh and, like, they'll bounce off him like everything else does. So that part, like, gets you out of who's running for office and into, this is, you know, end of January 2017, this is what it's like. Everybody's making fun of Bill Clinton being first dude or first gentleman. And that, to me, is like, that's how you sidestep all of that stuff and just get out of the contrast itself and just go, okay, that's all very interesting because lots of people have lots of opinions about all this stuff that's happening around this guy. But the truth is that everyone has an opportunity to use it to their benefit. And, you know, if it makes it more clear to you that an equitable society is the one you want to live in, well, then that's awesome. So you go in that direction, more equity, not less him. You see what I mean?
Right. Yes, you're right.
And so then the other thing, too, is then that one of the things that I think for myself has been really helpful is to realize because everybody does have an opinion about these things, and I'm not going to always like them. It's okay for other people to have their opinion. It's also okay for me to disagree, and it's also okay for me to just be like, I'm not going to answer that question or get involved in that conversation because I don't want to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the first dude or, like, the 47 different terms that I can come up with to think of a good way to describe Bill Clinton as partying down in the White House, you know, at age whatever how old he is, like, and how fun and interesting that whole dilemma is going to be. Or I want to talk about, you know, these amazing, exquisite organic carrots that I'm growing, whatever it is. Just something that's not that, because I'm not interested in that, and I don't have to get rid of that. And that's one of the things I love that Paul says, is that there's no trash bin in the universe. There's no disposal. There's no, like, garbage pail. You can't throw anything away. Literally, it's impossible. On a physical level, it's impossible. You're just transferring stuff from one place to another. But metaphysically, all thoughts have to evolve. And I see for myself what we're going through in this country is an exposure of the id, to use the Freudian term, of the American psyche. I mean, I grew up in the South. I'm not hearing anything I haven't heard my entire life. So this, to me, is all just like, well, I know that other people in the rest of the country think this is like some weird thing that's never been talked about before, but it's like, no, this is, if you're gay, black, Latino, anything different in the South, you've heard all this stuff. And if you're white and are gay, for example, like myself, where you can pass as one or the other, like when people when I was even up till probably 10 or 15 years ago, there's that thing that happens where white people will get together and whisper among themselves, like, did you hear what that person did? And they'll use all the pejorative words and blah, 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 because we're all together because we're white.
Mm-hmm.
That used to happen to me a lot until I finally was like, realized, A, I didn't really want to be around people who were going to do that, so that began to shift. And B, that I could just get up and walk out of the room, or I could just look at these people and be like, I completely disagree with all of this, and I think you're, you know, crazy, and I'm going to leave. In other words, to me, this is just an exposure of something that's been going on for a long time, and I'm extremely optimistic about it. I mean, beyond optimistic, because this is what, this is contrast. This is exactly what happens with contrast. When it gets exposed, it fades. It sometimes it's messy, but it does evolve. And thoughts have to evolve, and he's doing us a great favor by helping them evolve. That's my opinion.
Jackie, do you have a follow-up comment?
No, I like that. It was kind of what I was heading towards, is I don't want to give any attention to it at all, because it's not usually in my awareness. I don't watch the news, I don't do all those things. So, but focusing more on what I want, I hadn't slipped into that side. So that's very, very cool.
You know, it makes me think of someone like my business partner, Lisa Hayes. Frank, you might know this about Lisa. She's both LOA savvy and politically active, which is sometimes a challenging thing for her, especially when she's been attending protests on, someone in her community, two young black boys were shot, or were they both shot? I think one was killed, one was paralyzed. And you know the story. And she's been very, very active with the families, with the very active. Ooh, did you just hear the way I said it? Like, I know for Lisa, it didn't feel good to not step up and do something. But the things that she's doing are probably, LOA questionable, right? Like putting, Frank, what did you say at the very beginning? Right when Jackie asked her question, you said, well, you're trying to want what you already, you're trying to not have what you already have.
What you already have.
Right, yeah, right, yeah.
What
trying to get rid of what
exactly?
You already got. Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, trying to get rid of, if the genie's out of the bottle, it's already too late. If it's happening, it's already happening. So it's what you do with it. And that's why, you know, Paul will say, why something happens is the least useful question you can ever ask, particularly from a metaphysical perspective, to ask the, like, well, why did I create this? It's a useless piece of crap question. It's an understandable question because people think that if they understand why they did something, they'll stop doing it. But that actually isn't true. Understanding why you did something doesn't change anything. Changing your mind about what it means changes it. So when, you know, Lisa's doing whatever she's doing, I mean, to me, there's two things actually that you said, and I'm sorry I'm jumping around, but this, it's so juicy. If you follow the principles of LOA, yes, it's questionable. But if you're just paying attention to your intuition, who knows? And, you know, alignment, intuition, those trump everything. Everything. Everything falls in front of that. There's no written word. There's no idea that's more powerful than alignment. And so if she's in her alignment and she's doing what she's doing because it feels better, that's...
Well, look, I've wondered about this myself. Jackie, go ahead.
I was going to say, knowing how Lisa does these things, I mean, I'm not speaking for her, but from the outside, this is her alignment. It is,
right.
She's making change that heads in the direction of love and allowing.
Can we make change that way effectively, though, or would she be better off tending a garden and walking through the neighborhood looking at flowers? And I could stop talking about Lisa.
It's a really good theoretical question, because actually the answer is, nobody knows. Not even Lisa. Because only all that Lisa knows is what's right in front of her. And so that's, you know, Seth says the present moment is where all power is. There's no power in the past and there's no power in the future. The present moment is where all the power is found. So it's the decision you make right now that's the significant one. It's the contrast that arises out of these really juicy conversations. Talking about it philosophically and theoretically as a principle, it's powerful stuff because their ideas and like seeds get planted and all sorts of wonderful things come out of that. But the rubber hits the road in the present moment. So whatever Lisa's doing, I'm sure it's amazing, knowing Lisa. Whatever she's doing, it's amazing and it's sparkling and it's something fabulous, just like what's happening here in this conversation. with everyone here?
Like, there have been other things in the news lately. I'm thinking of one in particular that I'm not even going to repeat because that's how much I've skipped it. Like, I saw enough to know I want nothing. I'm absolutely not paying attention here. But when a friend posted, Michelle Woodward posted something, oh, it was the letter from the girl who had been raped. I read the entire letter. I read the entire letter, and then I posted on Michelle's wall. I think I said something like, wow, or I don't know. I weighed in, I paid attention, and then, so what I'm wondering about in this conversation is, look, there are some things that were just too horrific for me. I can't believe that one doesn't fall in that category because that was pretty horrifying. But what?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Part of me wonders, look, the thing that really matters to me, I totally don't put any attention on that. Not even going to mention it here, but on the other thing, I wonder how much is that me getting a little drama fix?
Well, that's so funny. Because I think of two things immediately, which I'm like wondering, should I say that loud here on a recording or not?
Yes.
So think about all the times that you reach for a cup of coffee because you thought, I know there's a drug inside this coffee called caffeine, and I know how my body reacts to it. And I know that when I drink this cup of coffee, I'm going to like get a hit because that's what it is. It's a stimulant.
Mm-hmm.
What immediately came to my mind was actually Coke. And I was like, and I mean, not the bottled kind. Yeah, the cocaine.
What came to mind when you said it was chocolate?
Well, chocolate. I'm like, no, chocolate is like the healing elixir of the gods. So I mean, that's it's fine.
I agree.
But even if you drink a cup of coffee to get a hit, the point is like, if you're going to do anything, and this is something I love that Paul says, stand behind it.
I love it.
Right. Don't take a misdemeanor and turn it into a felony. That's what they say.
Don't feel guilty. Don't question.
Right.
Don't regret.
No judgment.
Yeah. It's just like, it's done. It's gone. That's bridge under the water. Water under the bridge, depending on where you are. Sometimes it is bridge under water, like in Houston. But that is, it's gone. It's done. And you can't get it back. So you don't want to make yourself wrong for having done it. Because, you know. But, you know, I also think that there's sometimes these things, well, I don't think this. I know this from my own experience. Sometimes I've walked down tunnels that were very narrow and very horrifying in their own way because there was something inside of me that actually found relief in that.
That's so interesting.
And so if I think of myself as a multidimensional being, it makes a lot more sense. If I'm thinking of myself in linear terms, like I started here and now I'm in the middle and now I'm going there, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But if I think of myself as multidimensional and I have lots of ideas about lots of things, and I've had lots of ideas in the past about lots of things, and there's a whole deep metaphysics thing about this, about what Paul calls the monsters in the basement. Of like, we have things that we are not willing to let go of because of how frightened we are of them. And then we realize that we're actually holding them captive. I think maybe we talked about that last time. And sometimes they come up, and sometimes they come up through letters like that. Sometimes they come up because you suddenly, you're click, 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 and all of a sudden it's like, here's a terrifying picture of some horrifying thing. And yet, like, by allowing yourself to have the experience, something shifts. Because, you know, we did talk about this last time, like the whole problem of like not wanting to feel bad as opposed to choosing to feel better, which are two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
And the conscious choice of like, okay, I see this thing, I see this monster, but I'm not going to give any attention to it. I'm going to turn my attention away, which is not the same thing as ignoring it, because that's a conscious choice. And I think the power is in the consciousness of that choice, not in the ignoring of the unwanted. It's like, consciously choosing, oh, yeah, I get it. I got this thought. I've got this opinion. I've got this thing. I've got this memory. Fine, fine, fine. Now, I also have these amazing cats. And that's where I really got to put my attention.
I was thinking about you writing your fiction, imagining that this was maybe a way for you to get, I don't know. I don't know if drama fix is the right thing, but we like our stories, right, Frank?
Well, but we are a story. That's what we are.
We are stories.
Right.
I was just thinking. how much, no, and like I mean, you said to me before, like when we watch TV, sometimes we just want to let someone else tell the story for a while.
Right.
I love that thought.
I don't know the answer to this question because in the first book, I got a minor complaint on a review that said, there's not a lot of mystery in this mystery. And I was like, yeah, that's right. Because it really was setting up like the characters and the circumstances and situations and whatnot. But in the second book, there's a murder and it's gruesome. And there's a whole chapter where two characters are in the room with the body, just talking. Now they're both kind of hard. They both have like, they're both police. They have a police background. They have, and they're accustomed to this, so it sort of makes sense contextually. But there's like this whole. I kept trying to move them out of that room, and they wouldn't go. They had to stay in that room, and I still don't understand why, but they did. And I sat with that for a while. In fact, I was very uncomfortable for a couple of days in the middle of this little section because it was more than just that. And I kept thinking, like, you know, I am writing this book, but I'm not writing the book. I'm letting it happen through me. So you know, it's a channeled book, essentially. They all are. So the story just kind of tells itself. And then I'm like, I don't know who did it yet. So, but in the writing book, there are some things that these characters are acting out on my behalf. And one of the things I've begun to notice is that considering that I spend a lot of time alone, which I really like, the main character in all these different books that I've written, because this is the like fifth one, the others before this are going to show up, but always has like a coterie, a group around him. And I'm like, I like that idea. I just am like very picky about who's in that group. And and so it's like, this is, you know, he's working, he's having that experience on my behalf. I mean, I really feel that. So I don't know
I wonder how much of that is happening, like, with all of us who are here now, like, as others are having these experiences on our behalf.
Paul would say every single story you've ever heard about anyone anywhere is some sort of expression of your own experience.
Super cool.
And it's kind of scary though if you take the far end of the example. Like you mean, so this person murdered someone. But as Paul would say, how many times have we thought, you know, if this person would just disappear, I would feel better. That's what murder actually is someone deciding, I would feel better if this person was dead, and then acting on it. And so that, you know, metaphysically we know the person who dies, they're fine. It's the person who killed someone. They're the ones who are going to have trouble. Not from a legal perspective, but which they probably will, but from a metaphysical perspective. Because now they've enmeshed themselves in someone's life in a way that's going to be very difficult to get out of.
That makes sense.
Well, that was
related to this subject, does anyone have a follow-up question before I change the subject?
May I? I'm not sure whether to come in here or not, actually, because I was a few minutes late. Hello.
Yeah. Hello, Sean.
Hello. You recognize my voice because I've got a different accent from it. Hello.
I recognize your accent. Yep.
Yeah.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. I came in 5 minutes late, so if you don't want to backtrack, I completely understand. I obviously didn't hear the question. Were you referring to not reacting when something bad happens and when all this horrible stuff comes up in the news, but rather letting go of it and making a choice to focus on what one wants? Is that what you were referring to in the original?
Specifically in reference to in the U.S., there was a young, we know him as an Olympic hopeful swimmer instead of a rapist.
I read about it, yes.
You know the one. Okay, yeah. Jackie was asking about, you know, look, the thing from what we know about what we give attention to, but this thing is kind of enraging.
Yeah.
Okay, so actually, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about Donald Trump.
What, Frank? That's so hilarious.
That's why you guys must have been so, like, why are we talking about Bill Clinton? Where did this come from?
Not die.
Well, I think the answer is the same, right?
Right. Yeah. No, it, yeah, it absolutely yeah. is. I also love that I, because I've been doing a, what should I call it? I'm not in the news anymore, into the news anymore. And so I have no idea what you're talking about. This, the specific thing you just mentioned, Jeanette, I don't really know anything about it. So I really just, it was just another white racist. I didn't realize that we had another one that we were talking about.
Well, it's in reference to the entire system is racist because the kid got 6 months because the judge thought it would impact him harmfully if he got more prison time or jail time than 6 months. When you know he was convicted by a jury of a variety of things that.
So that brings up another. So I want to throw something out there that really might upset people. Mm. But. So do we have a justice system or do we have a revenge system?
When you say we, are you talking about the states or generally?
No, I would say the states is probably more revenge-oriented, but doesn't let Australia off the hook. But
generally?
Yeah, generally. I mean, is the purpose of imprisonment, in the United States at least, for revenge or is it for justice? And what's the, and
I
whether,
don't care whether, what it is.
Well, that's... Right.
Okay, so I should have got more time. No.
Right. So you'll feel better if he does more time.
Yeah, I
feel free to hit me the next time you see me. So,
no, I guess, you know what, Frank, this, I really like how you said that. I'll feel better when I decide to, right?
Yeah, right, of course.
When I decide to.
Right.
When I decide that girl's going to be okay.
Right, and his punishment is not going to make you feel better.
It might.
And look what happened to OJ. It could happen to him.
But see, all of these are all just revenge fantasies, which is fine. I'm just, like, wanting to point that out. There's nothing about justice here. Because there is no equality in if someone is hurt, you cannot equally hurt someone else. It's literally impossible.
And is that speaking to the illusion that all of life is?
Well, it is, yes, yeah, because obviously I'm not talking in any legal terms, you know.
Right.
But even in legal terms, like, what is the difference between 6 months and 20 years? So, I wouldn't want to experience 6 months or 20 years. Right. But, I mean, it's just, I'm throwing it out there as just a question, not that it needs an answer, but because there was a workshop that we did a long time ago where Flavia actually asked a question about why do some people get caught who commit crimes and other people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was, it actually does have to do with alignment. Because if someone is aligned with the committing of the crime and they are, this isn't fair, but if they're aligned with it, that's alignment trumps everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the people who get caught who are not in alignment with, they're in alignment with getting caught, with getting
mm-hmm.
punished, which is why a lot of people will say they commit crimes because basically they're trying to push to find out what their limit is. So in that conversation, there was a second part of it that had to do with the conversation about the revenge system and how punishment of crime is really predicated on revenge, which is not wrong. It's just like, but let's don't call it justice. Let's just call it what it actually is. And it's okay. Because that does feel better, right? In a lot of despair, revenge is a much better feeling thought. But I just wanted to throw that out there because it's tough, and it's tough because this is all internal anyway.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I have another question for you. Oh, were you done, or were you just going
to? I'm thinking I'm never going to be on this call again.
Yes, you will. You'll be as many times as you want to be. You're so silly. Now, we've had enough conversations to know we don't really risk our love for each other with our responses, right? I mean, not
no,
that we
absolutely.
Put that to the test, guys. We,
no.
It's not like we've really tried, but...
No.
No.
I was just thinking about how... But I was thinking about how leading edge this kind of topic is. That's
maybe.
What kind of made me laugh.
Well, okay. I don't know if... I don't think this is leading edge. This is just my... this could be a factor of my resistance. One of our GDU members led, she's leading a group on, she invited everyone and invited me. I did not accept this mission, however. She invited everyone to practice surrender. Okay, Frank, a couple months ago I read the book The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer because everyone keeps raving about it. I read it. I liked the book quite a bit. I liked his experience. I liked how he told it. And when Amina invited us to practice it, the first thing that came to mind, because the way she described the surrender practice is the same way Michael practiced it in his book, which was saying yes to whatever life delivered. Did you see the blog post on this by any chance?
No, I didn't. I hadn't had a chance to read it, but I saw the...
I know. There's crazy conversation over there. It's a lot to read. But the gist of it is that the way Michael practiced it and the way Amina invited us to practice it was to say yes to whatever showed up. Well, what had showed up recently in my life was, it wasn't just one. It was two ex-boyfriends that were looking for a booty call. I was not interested in that. Also, an ex-boss inviting me back to corporate world, be back in the fold where I belong, he said. Okay. That doesn't appeal either. These things don't appeal. This is what life presented, though. So a surrender practice, I was pretty horrified at the thought, oh, my God, what if I had said yes to a surrender practice and I was doing it the way – because I understand the value of giving up resistance. I understand the value of going with the flow and allowing. But the way that they are defining this surrender practice to me doesn't account for my preferences or my inner guidance. And that's
Bingo.
Why I'm not down with that practice.
Bingo. Bingo. Well, so here's the thing. I have to really acknowledge I learned this from my mother. This is like what I'm about to say is I'm just basically quoting her. It's the willingness to say yes that is significant. It's not the saying yes. If you're willing to say yes, they'll never call you again. Because that's where you drop the resistance, is you drop the resistance in your willingness. And everybody thinks, because people tend to, well, not everybody, but many people, including me, tend to think that willingness means action. Like, if I'm willing, then I'm going to do it. Like, it's like I'm standing on,
sort
of, like, soaked over cliff that, like, any false move is going to send me over the edge.
I just podcasted on this yesterday when I told the story about how when my cat, my very favorite cat, I'm sorry all the rest of my cats, but I do, Elvis is my favorite cat, and he looked like he was dying. I actually thought maybe he actually already isn't here anymore. That's how close to death he was. And Ming actually says, yeah, that guy went. But then I was like, I'd been resisting and been resisting and been trying to get him better, really hoping, trying to focus, and this guy healed. And then finally when I was like, oh, my God, he really is, he's going to go. And I thought of contrast, and I thought of how, you know what, whenever something's really bad going down, it just means it's going to get really good after it, and it only gets better. And I thought about that, and I thought, really, universe, you think you can do better than Elvis? And I thought, I'd like to see that. And I made peace. In that moment, I made peace that this cat's going to go because I knew it's only going to get better. Better than Elvis? I would like to see that. Like, I genuinely meant it. And that guy was better within an hour. He lifted up his head. He shifted position. He was drinking. 24 hours later, he was totally fine.
Right.
So I get that. Now, I want to say I don't have resistance to the invitations. I had resistance to the idea of saying yes to it. Like, I don't mind. People.
Right, but see, that's where the rubber meets the road. Is like your willingness to say yes as opposed to your actual saying yes.
Right.
And I don't think so. Parsing that out is a little bit difficult because this gets back to sort of kind of what we teach each other about how we're supposed to behave is that if you say you're going to do something, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've never thought that was a good idea. And I used to really, really would never talk about that, would never admit that. But I would think, because I was in the early 90s, I was in like the middle of a group of people who were basically all, you know, I'm trying to remember what the name, Landmark Forum people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's, you say you're going to do it, you're going to do it no matter what. That's their backbone.
Yeah.
And I just don't, because it does, it cuts out intuition, it cuts out your awareness of what's real. It also does not recognize the movable, as you demonstrated with Elvis, it doesn't recognize at all the fungible nature of the universe, that physical reality is an illusion that's painted in every moment, and it changes all the time. And if we set up a long, straight line, narrow track, and just decide that's the track I'm going to go down to and everything is going to conform to this. Well, that's fine. That's the use of will, and that's powerful. But once you're on the track, being willing to change, like you're not going back to a corporate job, but you could be willing. I mean, dear God, the only person I know who's not going back any more than you is me. So it's like I don't know what you're talking, like, who do you think you're talking to? Like, where I belong? Because a couple people tried that with me also after I left my corporate job. Now, like, within a year or two. And my mother very wisely said, just be willing to say yes and they'll start calling you.
Hmm.
And she was fine.
May I have comment on this, please?
Yes, Sean, let's hear.
Well, what I'm thinking is, in that story you just said about this, these things that happened to you, to me, it wouldn't be so much resisting the willingness to say it, but something about a resistance to the fact that they actually asked you. It's like, but can't they see? That's completely not me anymore. So maybe it's saying yes to the fact that being willing to accept that they actually asked you.
Well,
I
the
like,
contrast that comes out of that.
Sorry,
Jeanette,
what did you say?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Well, I do. I agree, Frank. The contrast, the huge contrast for me, like, was listening to Amina's invitation that had I said yes to the mission of surrendering, it feels like abandoning my preference, my desires. But I also, as a conscious creator, understand resistance is not a cool thing to be rolling with. But there has to be a way for surrender and desire and inner guidance. Because it wasn't just, I feel like it was my inner guidance that says, no, corporate world is not for us anymore. Like, I really feel like that's a genuine, true desire, not limited thinking on my part. But,
but yes, it's okay that they asked you rather than, oh my God, how can they even imagine that I might want to? I don't know. That's just a thought.
I like being in demand. You know me. I got the kind of ego that wants to be wanted everywhere I go.
Okay. That doesn't fit then. Okay. Yeah.
But so Frank, what's the role of surrender in a conscious creator's practice?
Well, I think in order to have what you want, you have to surrender. But it's not the problem is that this book you're talking about, which I'm familiar with, I haven't read it, so I'm not that familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with the plan to surrender, okay, so this reminds me, I've forgotten about this. When I lived in San Francisco, I knew this guy, really sweet guy, and one day was like, I was like, do you want to go to dinner, you know, with like this group of friends? And he was like, no, I'm going, and I really thought he was kidding, but he wasn't kidding. He was like, I'm going to my spontaneity group. We meet every Wednesday at 8 o'clock to plan acts of spontaneity. And I was like, you're kidding, right? You're like, this is a joke. He's like, no. We meet from 8 to 9:30 and we talk about our acts of spontaneity and what we're going to do spontaneously. And I'm like, but you do understand that's not spontaneous. So anyway, the point is,
it sounds like a really bad excuse. Like, I could see why you would think he was joking.
Yeah, because it's like, well, I just like, you're like, because he did have a really weird sense of humor, and I thought, oh, this is just another one of those things. But it's the same thing of like, in the moment, which is where all the power is, you're in that total state of surrender. If you think about just how your body works, cells are dividing, you're releasing things in ways that we don't really want to talk about. Blood is moving through your body. All sorts of things are happening, and you're not in charge or control of that. But it's happening for you, and you have. And in fact, as everybody knows, the less involved you are with trying to manage your body, the better it works. Like, the more you are just to say, you know, like, oh, or at least for me anyway, I have this thing that I've been saying lately that I just love. Like, my blood and my oxygen know exactly what they're doing, and I can literally feel a physical response all over my body when I say that.
Frank, I remember you saying, and you kind of spoke to it here already, in order to have what you want, you have to be willing not to have it. Does that
right.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And that's because we don't have attachment, or is there something else behind that?
No, it's because the universe is delivering. What we're really dealing with here is how we all train ourselves to get things done, which means that in order to get things done, there has to be the assumption that it isn't done already, right? why would you be doing something if you have no need to do it, particularly from that very pragmatic perspective? So the surrender, which is mostly what we're doing, like most of this is surrender. Very little of it is resistance. We just put a lot of attention on the resistance while all these other systems work on our behalf and do all these magical things for us, like cells dividing and amazing things like that, or like eating and then letting go of what you don't need and keeping what you want. Amazing stuff. So, like, we go around thinking about, like, what I'm not doing right, what I'm not doing right, because we trained ourselves to believe that by identifying the problem, then we can apply the solution. So the surrender of intentional manifestation is just like, I know what I want, I'm letting the universe take care of it, and I'm just going to go free. It's like the
goosebumps.
One of the most amazing things you ever said to me was actually on a call. I know I've mentioned this before. I'm probably going to talk about it every time I talk to you because it had such an impact on my life. I was driving from Austin to New York. I was like, hurry, hurry, hurry. I don't really have enough money for this trip. I've got to get there faster because blah, 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 blah. And it was in Alabama, just south of where all the states meet, Georgia and Tennessee, where Chattanooga is. And I was listening to a GVU call, and you said, I just really notice how much more clients I get, or how much more I sell, or something like that, when I'm playing on Facebook. And I come up to this exit where there was road construction, and like there was like a little side road, and it said such and such falls. And I'm like, I'm going to go see these falls. I am not going to just keep driving. And I had the most amazing afternoon. It was so enchanting. Like, the falls were no great shakes, but there was this drive beyond that that took me into the back end of Chattanooga, and that was when I had my convertible. There was, like, these, like, up and down hills, beautiful scenery. It was just, you know, the height of spring. It was gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. And by the time I got to Chattanooga late, oh, my God, I felt so much better. And, of course, money cascaded in.
I love how that works.
Yeah. So it's that, like, surrender into the inevitability, surrender into the already havingness of it, and let the universe sort it out. But to me, that's – you could try to do it another way, but it's not going to work out very well.
Yeah, someone asked me on an interview the other day what the biggest hang-up was for successful creation, and I said, believing that it isn't already here, you know,
that
– thwarts a lot of people. Okay, I want to see if anyone else on the call has a burning question. I had one on my Facebook page. Look how I feel like I'm being so generous. I'm setting aside my bazillion questions and inviting anyone else to ask theirs. Let me find mine real quick because I had promoted this call on my Facebook page. And Sylvia D., when you try to get clear on what you want to manifest and keep getting the what you don't want popping into your mind, how to visualize and manifest what you do want quickly?
Well, let's see, how do I want to say this? I give that sort of thing three tries. If it comes up three times, like I'm sitting there and I'm like, I really know what I want here. And then like the unwanted knocks on the door, once, and I'm like, no, not answering the door. Twice, not answering the door. Three times, okay. Now I'm going to sit down and feel my way into the unwanted, because that I really do have come to understand very clearly that contrast doesn't come out of nowhere. It's not like meteorites hitting you on the head. Infinite intelligence is serving up contrast very specifically, because it knows I'm ready to let that go, to literally let it go, like open the door and say, here's the door. Walk your way out. So when it comes up three times, and that's just a mental, I'm sure I don't do it exactly like that, but I always know like this, okay, this is the time to turn and sit with it. Paul says there's three ways to handle contrast, which I love this phrase. And so let's see if I can do it right without them here. Number one is to like let the house burn down, which is the least common way of dealing with it. But it's like falling out of the airplane without a parachute. They'll be like, the house is burning down. You get a cigarette. You use the burning embers to light the cigarette, and you just stand there and grimly watch the whole thing happen while you're smoking. Because it is just too late to deal with shit. Like, it's already done. And you got to wait till the whole thing is done, and then you'll start over. That's very rare, but it does. That's they'll say the reason why we say it first is because it hardly ever happens. But it's important to remember that sometimes does happen.
Why is that rare? That seems kind of common to me. Like there's nothing to do but write it out because you really, a person might not have the skills to choose anything else.
Well, but I think by the time someone is in a conversation where there's a ghost saying there's three ways to deal with contrast,
they do have
that's
options.
Not
okay, cool.
Anymore.
Let's hear the other two.
So the second one is to engage it, which is bring it into the vortex with you and let it kick you out. That's one way of engaging it. Sit there and feel the feeling until the feeling is passed, which if you really sit there and do it and you just feel it and let all the thoughts come up and don't push them away, it takes 2 or 3 minutes. Because there's never, we have nothing that we're dealing with that takes longer than 2 or 3 minutes to feel through. So, but it requires willingness to think the thoughts that are going to be associated with the vibration of what's moving through. And that's often where people stop because they're like, I can't think that thought. So that's engage it. But there's lots and lots of other ways to engage it. You have like given thousands of different processes for how to engage contrast and how to let it sort itself out. And so there's, you know, tons of resources on that. But then the third one, which is the one that is probably what most people do that's easiest to get to, which is, okay, there's that thought. Now I'm going to turn my attention. But what Paul does say, kind of like in alignment with what I was saying earlier, is there comes a time when the monsters in the basement knock on the door so loudly that you can't ignore them anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you're going to have to be willing to feel the feeling of the unwanted before it's going to go away, because there's no, you can't throw away thoughts. There's nowhere, you can't push them down the disposal and turn on the switch. Like, there's no way to get rid of thoughts. They must evolve. And if you've got it, it's going to move through you eventually. But it doesn't have to be.
Wow. I love that thought, that thoughts must evolve. You cannot get rid of them. Ooh, that's,
yeah. But you're not. But it also isn't a call to like, okay, now I'm going to get rid of all my thoughts, which is sort of like the Sedona method.
Well, it kind of takes me back to Jackie's original question. Like, maybe part of our evolution is to give it a little attention rather than just trying to drop it. I guess that's the difference. If we can drop it, do. And if you can't, maybe there's a different way.
Or actually, instead of, there's, to me, what I've noticed is once this was pointed out to me by Community of Light, I realized there are times when, and I sort of said this long ago, it feels better to feel worse. Because there's this relief that happens, like, I've been ignoring this and pushing it away and trying to keep it at bay, and now it's finally.
And that takes
moving.
A lot of energy, right?
No, it's the easiest thing in the world to do.
Push it away?
Oh, yes. No, yes, exactly. Right, yeah. Yes, right. It takes a lot of energy. And also, you know, like, you know, if you ever see a bodybuilder try to hold a little tiny thing without crushing it because they can't quite figure out how much strength they have between their fingers. Like, we're knotted up with muscles of resistance, although they're flimsy if they're really tested. But we have these, what we consider like these permanent things of like the ways we push things back. And so it takes a little bit of practice to realize, okay, willingness means willingness. It means openness and allowing and letting this happen. And it's okay no matter how it feels. I like to say that all of this stuff originates with the idea that is, you know, I'm not a parent and I don't ever expect to be one. But it all comes down to the screaming kid in the grocery store. Everyone immediately realizes, I would feel better if that kid would shut up. And that is the worst thing we could ever possibly do to another person. Because the kid is probably screaming, like trying to sort out his own adaptation or her own adaptation to contrast, where for most of its life, they've been told, you get anything you want. And then all of a sudden it's all taken away. Like, I'm not going to carry you anymore. You have to walk. I'm not going to do this for you anymore. We don't do that anymore. That's just for babies. Right. And so that's culturalization. And it's in and of itself, it's fine. And everybody knows it's going to be like that before they get here. So it's not this terrible, horrible thing. But when the kid is, Paul said this to somebody the other day, the next time you're in a grocery store and there's a kid who's screaming on aisle 3, go to aisle 4. Don't go to aisle 3. Go to aisle 4 and stand on the other side and let yourself feel all the things that are coming up for you through that kid. You'll feel despair, you'll feel anger, you'll feel sadness, you'll feel rage, and all that's going to do is it's going to move through and it's going to be gone, and you're going to hear what the kid is actually saying, I want my freedom. Stop taking away my freedom. Mm-hmm. That's all they're saying. I want a toy. Well, as instant manifestors, we know if that kid wants a toy, that kid can have a toy. But the parent is like, but I'm not going to be the channel of that toy. I'm not going to do that for you. I would feel better if you wouldn't ask me that question. I would feel better if you would stop screaming at me. And I'm not saying like parents should just do everything their children want. They have to pay attention to their own intuition, obviously.
Right.
But that's actually where all of this dilemma comes from. Like, why contrast seems like this big, bad monster? Because we've been told, and we've told ourselves, mostly we've told ourselves, over and over again, don't.
Yeah. You mean the conscious creators in particular?
Yes, we become really aware of it as when we decide, like, oh, I really can have anything that I want. Then you become aware, oh, here's all the bazillion ways that I've been holding back on all the things that I want. By trying to do it right, or trying to get it done, or trying to make it happen, instead of just letting it happen.
Hmm. All right, that was a good response. Thank you.
Yeah.
I got a short one. I think this is a short one, and I know we're about getting close to the top of the hour. I had my whole family got crazy lit up with a local medium. She's called a medium. I haven't been. Everyone else has been, raves. I'm not a fan. One of the reasons I'm not a fan is because everything she's told someone is, everyone who sat in her chair, she has said to them, so-and-so from the other side, your mom, your dad, or your brother, whoever they knew who is dead, the message that they always get is, I'm sorry, you were right, I was wrong. Something like that. It was expressing some sort of, I'm sorry that I treated you the way I did, or something like that. I'm sorry I wasn't better to you. I know better now. I was wrong. Can you hear my little charge on this? I don't believe that when we're on the other side, sorrow is part of our gig. So anyone who claims to be channeling messages from the deceased, how could they include sorrow? That doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't think there's – all right, so those messages sound very familiar to me. Anytime I've ever done mediumship, which I don't do, it's too messy. But there's too many emotions that don't belong to me. So I don't do it anymore. But the people who do mediumship, they will say over and over again, that is the primary message that they get, is it's not regret and it's not sorrow. That's called reassurance. Because disembodied, the dead, are not sorrow. They're not sad. What they're telling their beloved is, I want you to hear this thing that I'm actually saying. Because if the dead actually talked in the way that they're actually feeling, it would just be like this.
I gotcha.
There wouldn't be any words. It would just be utter contentment, joy. So the medium is doing the translating, and that's why it's a medium.
Uh-huh.
So the medium is doing the translating, and the translating for the recipient, because mediumship is not for the dead. It's for the recipient.
Right.
It's for the living, you know?
Right.
So the translation is going to be like, I really am sorry. I really am sorry, which doesn't,
so
it's not regret, it's not sorrow. Those
it's
are just
a
words.
Soothing or a reassurance.
Right. Like,
I gotcha.
You, what? Because the significant message is, you are right. That's what every ghost worth their salt will say. Doesn't matter what incarnations they've had. Any real ghost will say, yeah, I mean, like Abraham, Paul, whatever, will say, you are right. You are right. You know exactly what you're doing. You are right, 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 right. And sometimes the only way they can hear it, because see, the other thing is, these people who come floating back into your reality, who are saying like, oh my God, it was like, you know, sliced bread and it was amazing. It was just incredible. Well, that's because they got tremendous relief. The words are not really that relevant, but you don't want to go. And part of the reason why you don't want to go is because you're not holding anything like your other people. There's nothing like, no, there's no one from the dead who has anything to tell you that you haven't already told yourself already.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I feel that very clearly.
Yeah, that makes really good sense. Okay. All right. Yeah. I was just having trouble making sense of how much inspiration they were having in these sessions that, to me, just felt like, yeah, you got to be kidding me. That makes total sense, though.
I don't know how much time we have, but there's something that came to me that I wanted to share real quick. If we have like 2 more minutes.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at the beach and I was out playing in the water before we started the call. And I was thinking about this conversation and I was thinking, for some reason, it came to me, idea of past life regression.
Holy crap. And that was one of my questions I wanted to ask you.
That was so funny. Well, I was thinking, I was like, I've used past life regression to my advantage and because I can do it on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I haven't done it in a long time. And I tried to do it, 6 or 7 years ago. I had a spout of, like, I did 1, 2, 3, and it was like, bam, 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 all these things released. Well, I was playing in the water, and I was thinking, well, and I was kind of directing my question to Paul. I was like, so why don't you ever talk about this? Like, you never talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, there's someone in the village, which is the online community, who has asked questions about astrology and numerology and past lives and things like that. And basically what they always say is, look, if you're here asking us this question, you're kind of, it's not you're in a more advanced class. There's nothing like that. You're just not interested in tools. What you're interested in is relief, because a tool is just a mechanism for relief. But if you can do the relief on your own, why would you need to use the tools?
Were they referring to astrology and numerology and past life regression as the tools?
Right. Because the person who asked the question was talking about, is an astrological chart correct? And they said, if you are reading a chart, it is correct. But because you have a very strong, they were talking to this person, you have a very strong belief in astrology. It works for you. It's a tool that's useful. And the clients who come to you, that's the primary way that they get relief. But if you have access to your ability to just change your mind in the moment and think another thought that feels better, then the tools are not really that helpful anymore.
Huh, that's interesting. Astrology was also on my list of questions to ask you. How do you like that?
Yeah, there you go. because the danger in having a conversation like this is it sounds like, oh, there's an advanced class, which no. For me, it's like my advanced class is called Laziness 101. What is the least that I have to do in order to have the maximum benefit? So, and I've always been like that, and I'm going to die like that. So,
sounds efficient to me.
Yeah, well, it is efficient, as long as it's not too efficient.
Hey, so, I was just thinking it would be good for anyone who's listening to this who doesn't know about the village and is really liking what they're getting from you. Would you say about what kind of party you're hosting and how they can plug into it?
Sure. There's really two very simple ways to do it. Go to communionoflight.com, sign up on the mailing list, and you'll start getting morning emails that are daily quotes called Early Morning Light, and they come out about 7 a.m. Eastern Time. And then you'll also get announcements about the different things that I offer, one of which is a daily call that's at 10 a.m. Eastern Time that's on a topical subject of some sort that lasts for a week. And on the call, if you are on the call live or want to send an email, you can ask a question. So you can sign up today and ask a question tomorrow, which I love. But we also have the Village, which is a different thing, which is 3 weekly calls that are timed so that anyone on the globe can be on at least one call a week. And you can be part of that, and it's a monthly or annual or lifetime kind of thing. And those are any question you want to ask whatsoever. And there's a huge archive.
Those are group calls and recorded,
those are group
right?
Calls. Yeah, they're so all, yeah, everything.
Do they have access to the past ones or just from here on out?
Oh, no, cool. All the way back to 2010.
That's crazy cool, valuable.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that don't give new members access to old content. So.
I can't imagine, because it's like, that's the best part. Like, you go in and start digging.
Right? That's the way I see it. It just gets more valuable every year.
Yeah, exactly. So there's more. There's like single topic workshops that go over a series of weeks. And I have a gigantic samples collection.
Yes.
And so that's like 300 and something calls. It's like, I don't know how many days you'd have to spend to listen to the whole thing nonstop, but it's huge, and I love that. There's a sample on just about anything we've ever done.
All right, so communionoflight.com to plug into any of those. And just for the record, we've been playing with Frank here today, not Communion of Light or Paul,
yep.
Frank Channels, but that's one reason why I love playing with you, Frank, that I feel like I get the best of everything when I talk to you. I get Paul. We heard you quote Seth. We heard you quote Abraham. You even quoted me once.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fun to play with you. And
it's
I can't believe our hour's
pleasure.
Passed already. So, you're invited back next time you want to play. Let me know. And thanks to everyone who came to join us for this conversation. And
I loved all the questions. So rich. Such good stuff.
Right? Oh, I have so many more for you, too. I want to ask you all about your personal, like, how you go through life. I want to know whether you recycle, whether you vote, whether you have, like, a daily routine for energy hygiene, all sorts of stuff. I'm just interested about you and how you conduct yourself, knowing what you know. But we'll save that for another time.
Okay. That sounds like fun.
I love you, Frank.
Love you, too, Jeanette. Thanks, everybody. Great stuff.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Jeanette.
Bye, guys.